Chapter 14. She waited for him at the terminal. He knew she would be there, but when he came down the escalator and saw her sitting in a chair among a parade of strangers, small on the floor below like a young girl, something inside him felt as if it was being crushed. She looked up and saw him as he stepped onto the ground floor and stood, took a few steps toward him, and stopped. Then she saw the ghost beneath his face for the first time and went to him. She took him in her arms, and they stood like that a long time. The flow of people parted around them like water, some of them muttering as they diverted from their isolate paths. Giles closed his eyes and just stood there with her, feeling her against him and smelling her, listening to the small sounds of her breathing, the rustles of fabric around her body, the sounds of their skin sliding together. He breathed her and felt her and closed his eyes and sighed. When he finally opened his eyes, he glanced up toward the ribwork in the ceiling and saw an omnidirectional lens beneath the fist and shield. He looked away, took her hand, and led her to the baggage carousel. They waited in silence for his suitcase to appear. The world outside the terminal felt open to him. When they passed through the sliding doors, the reverberation of echoes that swirled always around his head, the vocal chattering in many languages and registers, the clicking and banging, the chimes and the incomprehensible messages of the intercom, the constant beep and whine of electric carts, washed away under the softness of the cool outdoor air. He felt the pressure of the air lessen, and the world pulled away from him and gave him more space to occupy, and it felt easier to breathe. He felt Annalise's hand in his, and things began to seem better. She led him out to the car, and he walked slowly as he followed. When she realized he was trailing behind, she turned and waited for him to catch her up. She smiled and asked, "What's the holdup?" "They're not allowed around the airport. It's quiet here when the planes aren't running. I love the silence." He meant the drones. She linked an arm in his and said, "They're not that bad." "To you." "There aren't as many as you seem to think." He did not respond. She popped the trunk and Giles put his luggage and briefcase inside. When she started the car, they were momentarily assaulted by fast, loud, happy music before Anna tapped a screen and killed the radio. She winced through a smile and said, "Sorry." He smiled back and said, "I love you." 5 miles from the airport and into the city, the sky thickened again. No, they were not as numerous as Giles seemed to think, but he was in a mood that convinced him the agents overhead blackened out the sun. In truth, the act of looking up into the air at any given time might yield a sighting of 3 or 4 at most, yet to Giles, that was 3 or 4 more than he remembered growing up with. The skyways in New York had been ridiculous with activity, as if the denseness of that city had crammed them all in closer together. He liked being home away from that place, where the buildings felt like canyon walls and the sky was glimpsed only in crisscrossing blue lines. It was good to be back in the sprawl. She merged onto a freeway, released the wheel with her right hand, and used it to take up his left. His thumb began to swipe across the back of her hand mechanically, as though it had been triggered, and it paused at the joint of her thumb on every pass so he could feel at least one pulse of her strong heart. "I spoke to Reggie over the phone," she said. "Oh?" "He said you should take a week or so to rest up before you come back. He said not to worry about vacation time or whatever. It's off the books." Giles nodded thoughtfully. "Which is good. I can have you to myself and get you to do some things around the house." "Oh, boy. Sorry, mister. You don't just get to lock yourself away. I won't let you. It's no good for you." "But it would be so nice to do." "But it won't help. You need to get action."
Giles grinned, then cocked his head and thought a moment. "Why does that sound familiar? Get action."
"It's a favorite Theodore Roosevelt quote. He loved physical action as an antidote to despair. I happen to think he was right."
"Well, I suppose we'll find out soon enough."
"What happened after I left?"
He looked out the window at the other vehicles that swerved and circled around them like darting birds, and said nothing.
"I couldn't ask Reggie. I'm not supposed to know anything, remember?"
"Reggie probably doesn't know the details anyway."
"What happened, Giles?"
He remained silent a moment longer, then said, "The test was no good."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean it was no good.
No result, or rather no result that I could use. They gave me the whole day, and when my efforts came up empty, there was really nothing else to do. So, what now?
I don't know. I suppose I go back to work and find some way to be useful.
I mean, what happens to Cronus now?
Oh. Well, I suppose it goes back to work as well. It's either that or they shut it off. Maybe given enough time.
What?
I was just thinking that maybe after a long enough time it'd get smart enough to come up with something new. Maybe it'll be able to come up with a test that I couldn't, something that forces us to reconsider.
Is that something he can do? Get smarter?
Oh, of course. That's all it does do. It spent the last 2 years or so just getting to where it is now. If they keep the machine running, who knows where it is in the next 5.
Anna shook her head gently and squeezed his hand. How do you go from a raw computer to what Cronus is now in just 2 years?
I imagine it has to do with efficiency. It doesn't learn like we do. We require repetition to get information burned in sufficiently. Cronus only has to encounter a thing once to know it, to retain it. And just think, it'll never run out of memory. Every aspect of the system is scalable. They can just add capacity whenever they need to.
So he goes back to work for them?
Yes, Giles said. I understand Anagnoris has had quite a few projects in the pipeline depending on its input, or output, I suppose. I don't know what any of them are, before you ask. I just have an idea that they must likely build upon these breakthroughs the company has already realized. I have to imagine that the world will start to change quite a bit in the coming years.
He sighed. She lifted his hand and bounced it lightly against her thigh.
We'll get you home and not think about it for a while. Tomorrow, you can help me paint the den.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
You've been promising me for a year, Buster.
Yes, I know. The room is all taped and prepared. All you have to do is grab a roller.
The windshield exploded in a sudden blast of fragmented glass debris and roaring wind. He felt the car lurch lazily to the side, ram into some obstruction, and then he was weightless. Weightless as if he floated in water, and the whole world turned around him on a pivot. He lifted toward the ceiling, lurched against Anna, slammed into his seat, and rebounded off the door. And then he was again weightless. He felt another explosion inside himself, as if the intensity of the first blast short-circuited his hearing and his eyes did not work correctly. He felt that he had stopped moving, and the world around him had gone still. His surroundings were blurred through a single eye, and the seatbelt cut into his hips and neck, and he tried to speak but could not. He quested out with his left hand until he found her softness, and searched until he found her hand again, and he held it. He began to run his thumb along the back of it, paused at the joint of her thumb. Giles tried to turn his head to search for her, but could not. And he could not find her at the joint of her thumb. His eye rolled in its socket, but all he could see was the web of the obliterated windshield, and as his vision began to fade, the old familiar emblem of the fist and shield.